Hi, this is Daphne Cohn, and welcome to episode 6 of the Creativity Habit Podcast, conversations about art, creativity, and courage with artists, creatives, and makers. My guest today is a writer, speaker, and coach. She weaves together Eastern philosophies of Tantra, Zen Buddhism, meditation, yoga, and breathwork with Western psychotherapy and co-active coaching to help women heal and transform their sexuality within a sisterhood of wildly expressed women. She is Zoe Kors, and you can find her over at zoekors.com. In this interview, we begin with a brief history of the design world in the late 20th and early 21st century, and then dive into what it means to be a wildly expressed woman, how to get out of your own way, the integration of the masculine and feminine in ourselves and in our art, and the secret to creativity. May you enjoy this conversation, and may it inspire you to make your thing and change your world. Welcome, Zoe, to the Creativity Habit Podcast. It is a pleasure to have you here today.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here.
So the way that I start every interview is with your creativity story, which is where you go back to your childhood and just look at how creativity showed up for you as a kid.
That's such a great question for me. My parents are both extremely creative. So I grew up in an atmosphere. My whole home was really centered around creativity. My father is an artist. He's a painter. And he is also an art teacher. So he was the art teacher in my New York public school and always working on projects at home. So I was just sort of immersed in creativity, and I don't know that I ever really separated it from like my creative energy or creative pursuits. It was all sort of wrapped up and integral in daily life.
And your mother, was she, you said both your parents were very creative?
Yes. So my mother is a expert knitter. She knits and sews, not so much sews anymore, but when I was a kid, she made a lot of our clothing and knitted constantly and still does. Really, people marvel at her knitting. It looks almost machine done. She's so meticulous in the way she threads a piece of yarn into a garment. But she also was a kindergarten teacher and a nursery school teacher and a musician and played guitar. And she would put together performances, musical performances for her students. She would take well-known songs and rewrite all the lyrics. Very clever, very funny. So she was always sort of working on these projects or art projects with her kids and bringing that work home. So
because of that, did you ever question your own creativity, like that you are a creative being? Or as you said, like it was so woven into your life, was it just part of how you identify yourself?
Yes, absolutely. It was completely who I was. I was their daughter, and that's what we did. It was part of the family culture. But then in addition, they were so good at celebrating my own self-expression and creativity. Like, yes. And I went to dance classes, and we were making posters. My sister is 10 years older than me, and I grew up in New York. My parents are bleeding heart liberals, and we were making Vietnam War protest posters and singing folk songs. And it was just part of who we were as a family and individuals.
Before you got to where you are today, which is where we're going to go in just a minute, okay, there was a period of your life where you were a graphic designer, a branding specialist, and an art director. What led you there?
When I was, I'm trying to think exactly when this happened, but sometime when I was in maybe fourth, fifth grade, my father opened a business that he ran out of the basement called Night Owl Studio. And it was basically a graphic design studio. So he designed logos and menus and flyers and books and all the things that a basic graphic design studio would engage in. And so I saw that going on and was fascinated. I would go down there and watch what he was doing, and he would give me small jobs to do, and I learned how to do paste up. And that time was pretty primitive, and the tools were pretty primitive. I'm 52 now, so we're talking sometime in the 70s, you know, mid 70s, no computers. and he wasn't even specking type to be professionally typeset. He had an IBM Selectric with a font ball, and it was fascinating, actually, and interesting for me later on as a graphic designer to really have those roots and really know very much what it was like in the trenches of graphic design prior to some of the bigger tools we have now. That's the early genesis of my interest in design and graphic design. And as I grew up, I went to University of Pennsylvania. I studied art history, actually, and the chairman of the art history department begged me to continue into their graduate program and pretty much gave me a free ticket to continue. And largely because I had such a feel for not just the art itself, but because I could write. I remember telling him at the time I wanted to live an applied life. I didn't want to be a sequestered intellectual academic. You know, I wanted to really get out there and have a voice that was more mainstream and ingrained in popular culture. So coming out of college, I ended up getting a job designing book jackets and books at a publisher. And that was sort of the beginning of my career as a designer. And from there, I broadened out into identity design and branding and everything that entails.
Then what led you away? Because the path that you're on now is quite different from that. And we'll get to what that is in just a minute. So what led you away from this particular field of work?
Years and years and years of juggling the creativity and the running of a business. I really got burned out. What ended up happening over the course of a pretty healthy career was that I started to realize that what I was doing was not really art. It was really about selling. I studied with Milton Glaser, the great designer Milton Glaser, who most people know him for having designed the I Heart New York logo, but very rich career. And he's an incredible man and mentor and human being. I dearly love this man. And he said to me one time when I went to him in this, you know, moment of existential crisis, I was really losing my religion, and he sat down with me and we had a meeting and a chat, and I talked to him about it. And he said, you know, Zoe, make no mistake, what we are doing here is not creating art. We're selling biscuits. And I thought to myself, if Milton Glaser feels this way, I mean, I basically went to him, I think, asking permission to leave the profession. And he said to me, it's a stupid time to be a graphic designer. We've really lost our way in terms of how we value art and design and visual communication in that way. And if there's anything else that you can do to make a living, do it.
Wow. That's actually amazing. Coming from Milton Glaser, that is amazing. So you were, initially what you said was you were burned out on this mix of creativity and the making of a business. But then what it sounded like was it wasn't so much creativity and the making of a business as much as it was just the selling of your work, not so much that the art had gotten lost in all of that.
Oh, yeah.
Is that correct?
No, it's actually not correct.
Okay, so clarify that.
There's an aspect of it that is exactly that. But there's a secondary aspect that I think Milton was speaking to that I was really feeling, and that is this. When I reached this point of like, what am I doing here and where is the creativity, and what it's actually the selling of the product that I was designing for. The way that I phrased it at the time is that I was sick and tired of figuring out how to market $25 martinis to rich white people. Like that, and that's partly because of the market that I was in. I had wonderful projects. I branded a hotel, and that was actually like possibly the height of my creativity as a graphic designer, you know, an opportunity to practice what I call fractal branding, where every aspect of the hotel I was involved in, from the logo, the naming of the hotel, the writing and designing of the brochure, writing the scripts for the staff to answer the phone, dressing the staff. I collaborated with the architect and the interior designer to bring sort of a smooth experience and create just a total enveloping ambient brand experience. So that was a wonderful experience. And that was actually close to when I stopped doing that kind of work. But at the same time, the sort of beauty and purpose of design as a vehicle for visual communication to move and inspire had really been lost. And it was very much about the selling of a product. The way that brands used to be developed in the 50s and 60s, the artistry involved in that has really largely, I think, been lost. And I think that we're talking about, like, I come from a generation that's bridging this gap. I had to live through the disintegration of the design industry with the arrival of computers, where it got lost. And the elders in the profession, I'm laughing because I'm going down a road I never thought I would go down with you. And I'm actually loving it. I'm hoping that it's relevant to your
audience.
It's
great.
The elders in the profession were sort of pushed out because they didn't have the tools. So this fresh batch of kids come in and they're not trained. Okay, so after a minute they were trained, but there's something that it was lost in the legacy and the development and the long story of what it takes to be a brilliant art director. So the whole industry started to sort of collapse on itself. And during that transition, what ended up happening was a lot of programmers and technicians came in. The sort of design aesthetic and the importance of design went out the window because, you know, everything speeds up. You know, we're running a mile a minute here at this point in history in all aspects, not just the design, everything. So we end up with a bunch of programmers that are making design decisions. There was about a decade or two, a decade and a half, where there was a conversation between people who had no idea what was capable on the internet, and it was still such a rapidly developing medium that all these print designers and really conceptual art directors were trying to turn the internet into a print-like medium. And as the technology developed, we're at a much more sophisticated and much more integrated level at this point. And people who grew up in this environment are now seasoned designers who are designing on multiple platforms. And so we're maturing at this point. But I was coming from, I mean, I was in the trenches during that long haul. And that really was part of how I burned out. Yes, there's a whole other conversation that probably deserves its own podcast. You know, being creative and running a business and how do you manage that? And once you're running the business and then, you know, you have to delegate the work and you become a director and you're not really the designer. And I have all of those things too, because I really, like, I'm a maniac. I have to kern my own type, you know?
Okay. So first of all, I think we will have to do another one because there's so much you have to offer. And while I thought this was going to be one tiny piece of the conversation, there are so many questions coming up around it. And there's so many places we could go with this. So I think we will shift gears with the hope that we can have another conversation around this and go a lot deeper.
Sure.
So you've left the world of graphic design and branding, and you have moved into what exactly? Did you move into where you're at now, and or was there something in between?
Essentially, I moved into what I'm doing now. It started with two different things in my life. One is a dive into spirituality and an expansion of my lifelong yoga practice. And also, I enrolled in a life coaching certification program. So the combination of those two things led me over the last roughly 10 years to where I am now.
So let's talk about that because that's a whole different area than where you were before.
Yes.
Talk about where you're at now.
Where I am now.
Yeah.
Okay. I do a couple of things. I'm a life coach and I specialize in working with women, and I approach expanding the consciousness of women through sexuality and sisterhood.
Now, this is a path that you've moved into that many people consider still very bold, very courageous, and some would even say, wow, that's pretty out there. Where did the strength come for you to step out there and share this message of women's sexuality, healing, sisterhood? Where did that come from?
That's a good question, and I'm not sure I know the answer to that exactly. The New Yorker in me cringes. I've been in LA since 1991, and here comes the hippie side, and the New Yorker is like, oh no, don't say that. But feel like this is very much a divine calling. It's very similar to my creative work, both visual art and writing. It just comes through me. And the more I'm able to just get out of the way and let this voice come through me, the more I'm doing it and the more driven I am.
And how do you do that? How do you let yourself get out of the way? What are some things that you take yourself through to step back from stopping yourself?
Well, the obvious and easy answer is meditation. I have a process by which I sit and I connect with a place in me at my core that is, I'm laughing, I'm cringing, that is one with the universe, that is connected, where this person named Zoe really doesn't exist. That shell breaks away, and it's the part of me that is the same as you, or that part in you. And I just sort of tap into that. And I move through the day at this point. I've been working in this realm long enough that I do have a formal sitting practice. But I also am aware of that at any given point during the day. I can, especially when things get crazy and I'm frantic and I'm, shuffling kids around and coming up on deadlines, and I can step back. Even as I'm cooking dinner, I can sort of step back within myself and connect with that universal place.
I just want to say, just so you know, that I was born in New York and grew up in California and then moved back east. And I completely understand this dance between the cringing and this is what it is.
Yeah.
And I actually was just saying to my husband last night, I was like, I hate to use these words, but I feel like the universe has been so I totally get it. And it's definitely something that people listening will relate to.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Well, that's part of getting out of myself, this dance of maintaining my identity as like a straight shooting New Yorker, and also really honoring what I know to be true.
Yes. What I want to know is this connection with the universe, with the bigger picture, how that is directly linked to your creativity and to what you end up making in the world.
Wow, that's a really great question. And as I'm sitting here feeling into it, I can say this. The other thing that I sort of didn't touch on is how much I write. I'm also a writer, and I have some paid writing gigs as well, both in this world. I'm paid to blog for Fabletics, which is Kate Hudson's activewear company, and some other companies like that. And I'm also actually writing a book. I have a, I used to say I'm ghostwriting a memoir, but I'm actually not ghostwriting it. What it turns out to be is that I'm writing it third person, and I guess my name will be on the cover. It's a paid gig, exciting one. So it's interesting because in my writing practice, I guess the creative process of writing, I am tapped into this energy, this place, whatever you call it. And it's as if the universe is writing through me. There's a phenomenon where I will write, I'll write an article, I'll write a blog post for me, I'll write something, and I don't know what I've written at the end of it. It is a process of getting out of my way. And I get in this zone where I'm dancing with the universe. And it's almost like the words assemble themselves. And there are times when I'm writing and I'm typing. It's almost like a jumble of words sort of spit themselves out. And then I back it up and I'm like, wait a minute. And it's like assembling a piece of a puzzle, putting this, you know, these four words here. And what if I flip the syntax around and, oh, wait, there's a better word for that word. And then it all just sort of coalesces on the page. But by the time I get to the end of it, I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, it's a little awkward sometimes because, for instance, I wrote an article, The Cost of Being a Badass, which turned into the eight Rules of Badass Club. And it's one of my most important pieces. I mean, I think I might actually develop a course for women on this, on the eight rules of what you have to do and abide by in order to like be a badass in the world and be fully self-expressed and powerful as a woman. And people will ask me, and I don't even know what the eight... here and tell you what the eight things are. It really, like, it came through me. I had no idea at the end of it. I'm not sure this answers your question, but this idea of like tapping into this place of universality is, it has everything to do with getting out of my way and my creative process, because it's almost not even my creative process. It's just something that is asking to be born, demanding to be born.
So as someone who gets a lot of things done over the course of the day, who, I mean, you're writing for different magazines, the different outlets, you're creating your business, you're doing all different things, which obviously takes a certain amount of control and being on top of things. Do you find that you encounter any resistance to being that open, to dropping into the flow, to wanting to have some control over what's coming out? Or do you just go right into it?
I'm a complete mess all the time. That's the truth of the matter. I put in the morning, say, or in the beginning of the week, and then in the morning each day, before I do my meditation, I put all the things that need to be manifested in a day in front of me. And I take an inventory of deadline and what is sort of having to be written today because I've got to deliver it then. And I assemble all the pieces of what needs to be done. And I go with whatever I'm most inspired by in the moment, deadlines permitting. And as things get closer and I have to write them, I will then bring them up and put them front and center and just block out everything else and feel right into that and sort of open up the channel for that to come through me. And then it does. If I really need it to, it will come.
So the part of you that is the editor, the part of you that is the designer that's bringing it all together, where is she when that's happening? When you're just in the flow and you're writing, does she just go to the side? What I'm trying to get at is a lot of times when we're creating, those are a little bit, they're fighting with each other. There's the dropping into the flow and then there's the evaluating, there's the critiquing. And sometimes it can be hard to separate them. So how do you separate them?
It's a dance. It's a total dance. And I put her aside. I put the manager, the director aside, the editor. And then I just allow the flow. My first drafts are remarkably close to my final drafts. Mm. And I can't really explain that. Yeah. When I coach writers or I'm editing, and I've got writers that I'm editing. I used to be the senior editor of LA Yoga magazine. And and I still edit other writers. And that's not something that I advise. I'm happy for writers to write a first draft that looks nothing like their final draft. That's a very individual process. And I think that it's important for each creative to really embrace their individual creative process, whether it's writing or painting or designing or knitting or any of it. I think the way you work is unique, and the way that the art finds its way out of you as a vessel, it's unique and individual and beautiful and perfect, and there is no one right way to create.
Yes, that is so, it's so important, and it's important to underline, because we look to what other people do and how they do it, and I ask a lot of questions around it, mostly because I'm curious about what are the ways that other people are creating? What does your creative process look like? And knowing all the while that everybody has their own process, and to give ourselves, as you say, to give ourselves that permission to let our process be exactly what it needs to be.
Yes.
Another piece that is part of the work you do, you talked about sisterhood, and you talk a lot about this expression being a wildly expressed woman. I want to go into that, that's part of your mission is to create a sisterhood of wildly expressed women. So first of all, what does that mean to you, a wildly expressed woman?
It makes me smile so much. My heart expands just hearing you say that back to me. Okay. Here's where this comes from. A wildly expressed woman is a woman who has complete permission to express whatever it is that she is experiencing, whatever it is that needs to come out in terms of creativity, in terms of what she has to say on the macro level or the micro level, and however she looks and moves and expresses herself in the world. That's the wildly expressed concept.
And how do you see that showing up for you?
Me personally?
Yes. Like, what are some practices or examples of how you show up as a wildly expressed woman? Because we can think about these things and we could say, oh yes, it's whatever. But sometimes it helps to have concrete examples of what that looks like.
Okay. God, there's so many different ways to saddle this horse, but sometimes I dye my hair pink and walk around with pink hair. Also, as a mother, I've allowed my son, I have a 10-year-old son, he has dyed his hair bright blue. In my home, self-expression and wild self-expression is encouraged. We value that in our family culture. I've had two 10-year marriages, and for the last 9 years, I've been living, I call it blissfully single. I have dated, which is a funny word because I don't know how many actual dates I've been on, but some. I've not been in, intentionally not been in a committed relationship and not been looking for a committed relationship. And I've had many lovers, and I express myself that way.
So just a lot of permission.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So I know that you have delved very deeply into Eastern spirituality practices, teachings, and I'm curious how those two worlds meet, because I have spent a lot of time in Buddhism, living at a Buddhist Zen center, following the practices, and sometimes at the surface level, at least, it can feel like being wildly expressed doesn't always meet the way Buddhism looks. Does that make sense?
It does. Buddhism is like that.
Yeah. So how do you bridge your spiritual world with wild self-expression?
Right. Well, another great question. While I really lean into the teachings of Buddhism, some of my most powerful tools come straight from Buddhist ideology and practice. I really am primarily a tantrika and a bhakti yogi, which is a much more expressive, what I call wetter, juicier sort of spiritual path.
That's great.
with sort of much more musically and dance and mantra and really the symbology in Hinduism and bhakti yoga is much more rich and expressive. In Buddhism, we talk so much about desire and sort of eliminating desire and desire as the root of suffering. While I get that and really use that concept quite a bit, and desire, the definition of desire in Buddhism is a little bit different than the way we speak about it in our American culture. But nonetheless, I think for me as a householder, and if I didn't have kids, I might very well choose to go live in the Zen monastery and become a monk. But that's not who I am, and I'm not here to do that this lifetime. I'm here to walk the earth and engage in life and motherhood. So desire is a big part of my human existence this time.
You basically both found aspects of the spiritual tradition that really resonated with this path of being wildly self-expressed, and you formed it to your life, to your lifestyle. Along this path of the wildly expressed woman, one of the things that you talk about, that you write about, so you have something called the Pussy Project, and we'll get into that a little bit, but you write that a pussy is the doorway to the feminine aspect of the universe, to the creative energy that sparks life and sustains humanity. How is it a doorway into the creative energy of the universe?
I'm going to just take a minute here.
Yeah. And I'll just say, while you're thinking, that one of the reasons that I'm asking it this way is to really bring together the idea of a wildly self-expressed woman, the work that you specifically do, and creativity.
Yeah. Okay. So here's what I want to say here. I'm going to try to articulate my life's work as inspired by your question. All of us women, having come up in this male-centric culture, you know, we hear a lot about the patriarch as an entity, as the oppressor, but clearly we do objectively live in a patriarchal society. And there isn't a single one of us women who doesn't run interference with our own feminine essence and our sexuality. We've really been given no models for understanding and embracing the truth of who we are in our full expression. It's tender, fierce, fluid, strong, multidimensional, and expansive. That's our role here. It's scary. All of this mutable, spontaneous energy that we run is scary to the masculine mind, our own masculine minds, really. The linear, rational, predictable. It feels threatened by our unpredictable expansiveness. So men, or the masculine sensibility, looks at us and calls us crazy. And they say it like it's a bad thing. I mean, the fact is, we are crazy. And that's our role. That's our contribution. Like, therein lies our beauty. Our exquisite contribution to the whole dynamic is that we are crazy. Here we are, and what we're missing is the value and the honoring and the celebration of our ability to exist beyond reason, and to not have to order and control, to bring that life and that spark to the equation. I mean, we bring that, and that is the spark that creates life. We move around in the solid container of masculinity. When we say, like, we have that energy sparks life, it's the life force, that is our creativity. We are creative by nature. We create human life. That is rooted in our sexual energy and our sexuality. That life force, that juice, that in Sanskrit, the word is Shakti. And that's also our sexuality. The survival of the human race is predicated on our desire to have sex, for crying out loud. Mm-hmm, you know, that's what it is. So that's sort of where all of the spirituality, the divinity, and our cosmic role here, and the sexuality and the self-expression, and all coalesces into a very important piece that I believe needs healing and celebrating. That connection's been injured and wounded, and the wounded need to be seen and tended to, and the damage recognized and assessed and then defined and treated. And that's what I'm getting at. And the Pussy Project is a part of that. And really basically all the work that I do is rooted in that mission.
What I hear is it's all about integration. So when you have the healing, you help integrate the parts of you that are wounded. And then the way that you work with tantra, with meditation, with yoga, with breath work, all of those are integrative practices. And then it's also this integration between one's own masculine and feminine self, and being able to hold all of that within oneself, one's whole being. And from that, true creativity arises.
Beautiful.
So say a little bit about the Pussy Project.
Okay, yeah. So the Pussy Project, pussyproject.org. I conceived of this website based on something that I, a much sort of smaller version that I've done in my live workshops and retreats. There are a couple things going on here. One of the things that I've realized over the last several years in my work with women is the shame and conflictedness that exists in a disproportionate number of women about their bodies, and specifically their vaginas. There's a lot of messaging in media with the extensive sort of cultural presence, especially in the age of the internet, of pornography. Women's bodies and vaginas are really portrayed in a very specific way. It's wonderful. I have found that it's been a wonderful process for women to gather in groups and actually talk about their bodies and their vaginas and their feelings about their vaginas and the history and development of that relationship that they have with themselves. So in this past election cycle, when part of sort of the national dialogue all of a sudden front and center about women and their sovereignty over their bodies and the normalization or the proposed normalization of men feeling entitled to grab women's bodies, it really inspired me to take action and create this venue for the expression of women and the witnessing of women and their reckoning with their history, with their bodies, basically a place to display their bodies for witnessing in a way that isn't crafted, that is authentic, that is real for other women and men, but specifically, primarily for other women to really look and see and honor and accept and support and validate.
Yeah, very powerful. And it's fascinating because going back to why you left graphic design and branding was because at the time it became so much about marketing the brands in a way that didn't feel, wasn't allowing you to express your artistic self in the way that you wanted to. Mm-hmm. And here you come full circle to the Pussy Project, where it's the same idea in essence of the way that we present ourselves as women. It's not about marketing ourselves in a particular way to appeal to people for a particular reason. It's about showing up and expressing ourselves in the way that we want, authentically and honestly.
Yeah.
So before I finish, we've gone in a lot of different places over the course of this mm-hmm. interview. Is there anything in particular that I didn't ask or that we didn't touch on that you would like me to ask you?
No, I think there's an aspect of creativity that is characterized by truth-telling. And it's something that really excites me. If I had to describe what part of creativity, the essence of creativity that really excites me, that is undeniable part of human existence, is this aspect of truth-telling, whether it's standing looking at a Mark Rothko painting or listening to a Verdi opera or really any aspect. One of my son's paintings from school, there's an aspect of art That is an undeniable statement of truth. You know, Elizabeth Gilbert did a TED talk on this about the divine aspect of art and creativity. And Paul McCartney spoke to this as well when someone asked him about writing yesterday. And he was like, I have no idea. Like, I don't think I wrote it. I was just a vessel. And my father, my artist teacher father, always says that the human beings that are closest to God on this planet are artists. And I feel that way. And it's been the driving force, I think, in my life and continues to be, whether I'm writing or designing or creating a website where women post selfies of their vaginas. You know, there's just something about each and every artistic expression that is this divine moment of truth.
That's so beautiful. And part of the creativity habit is this belief that everyone is an artist. And what I hear reflected in what you just said is that it's the act of truth telling that makes someone in part an artist. And that is also what happens in the Pussy Project with the photos. It's, there's a truth telling that happens there. And that's where the artist is seen. That's us showing up as artists because we are sharing our own unique truth. Mm-hmm. And that brings me actually perfectly into one of the last pieces that I do with every interview, which is to take a moment to appreciate to appreciate you. And one aspect of what I have seen just over and over again in the course of my exploration of your work and now in this conversation with you is how committed you are to truth telling, to being who you are in the piece of being a wildly self-expressed woman and finding your place in the world and sharing that honestly, authentically, bravely, boldly, and then encouraging that in all the women who work with you and who come across your work, and to be a stand for that type of authenticity, that brave authenticity, is so essential to our time, what we need in this time, and to just take that courage and to use it to be the artist that you are. So thank you for that. Mm-hmm. And before I ask my final question, for folks who want to learn more about Zoe and her work, you can go to either zoecores.com. That's kind of the home base for everything that Zoe does. Or you can visit pussyproject.org. That's where everything that was connected to the Pussy Project is housed. And lastly, my last question for you is, why do you think the creativity habit is all about, as I said, everyone is an artist, everyone is creative, and everyone has something to make. Why do you think it's important that each one of us make our thing?
Wow. It's important for each of us to make our thing because we are here and born with a voice, and we are asked in whatever way or form that takes, we are asked to use our voice. We are here to speak our truth and to express ourselves. We were not put on this planet to be invisible. We are here to actually connect and use our voices and express our truths to connect with each other.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Thank you so much, Zoe.
Thank you, Daphne. It's been such a pleasure.